a novel called Port City Pagans, a story about betrayal, revenge, redemption, and love. The hero of the book is Charles, otherwise known as the flea-bitten mongrel, a country singer dealing with a bitter divorce during the Great Recession in the fictional town of Port City in Florida. Stay tuned to get an up-close and personal look at the writing of the book and also the lyrics within it that are going to be set to music and available on CD. My pleasure to welcome Christopher B. White to In the Country. Hey, Chris.
Hey, how are you?
I'm doing great. How are you this evening?
Doing really well, thank you.
Great. My pleasure to have you here, and a big shout-out to Stephanie Hall for setting this up. She is the great designer behind the website for you called PortCityPagans.com.
She did a fantastic job. Stephanie is a very talented individual who has a really broad knowledge of country music and marketing, and she's been great to work with.
And again, the website, PortCityPagans.com, our listeners can head there because from there, of course, they can learn more about the book and about you, and they can also order the book through different links there for Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com and so forth. But let's get into the book now. So this takes place during the Great Recession, which many people, of course, still remember. How could they forget? 2007, 2008 really hit the real estate market and so on. Talk about using that period of time, Chris, as the time frame in the book.
Well, for me personally, the Great Recession had an enormous impact on my life. I was very badly hurt financially because of the Great Recession, and during that period, I started working on this manuscript, and it felt like a natural fit to use that as the backdrop for someone who's struggling mightily and trying to make his way back, and sort of everything's falling down around him in the world, and he's scratching and clawing to make his way back and dealing with his personal issues, et cetera. And I also felt like it's important to chronicle this event because it has changed so many people's lives permanently. It's like the Great Depression. The people that lived through that, I don't think were ever the same. And I think those of us who were deeply impacted by the Great Recession are forever changed as well.
And the character in it certainly goes through metamorphosis. And in fact, from Charles, he takes on the name the flea-bitten mongrel. He becomes known for that as he becomes this country singer who starts to get a certain amount of success. I love it also that, you know, because it's a book about hard times, that you chose a country singer, because country music tells those kinds of stories and always has about people down on tough times but trying to get through them.
Absolutely. I happen to be a very big country fan. I love all forms of music, but country is definitely my favorite type of music. And one of the reasons is I've always felt like good country songs, the lyrics really speak to you. They talk about rough things. They, you know, sometimes bring a tear to your eye or a smile to your face, but they say something of meaning, in my opinion. And these songs, I think, you know, I certainly tried to accomplish that. And for him to sort of put his message out there, they're meaningful lyrics and they mean something to him, and I think they, you know, within the book they resonate with his audience. But I think the people that are reading the book in general who have a feel for rough times, everybody has tough times at some point in their life, and I think it does resonate.
And it's so cool that you not only have told this story in the book, but as you talked about, there are lyrics in here that you wrote yourself that are sung, you know, in the book by the character. And it's so cool that you actually took the skill of yours to write lyrics and put them in here. Let's talk about that for a moment, Chris. How far back have you been writing lyrics for?
Pretty far back. I was an English major in college and even in high school. Excuse me. English was always my favorite subject, and writing in particular. And I had a great teacher in high school who was a fantastic poet, still is a gentleman named Ron Smith in Virginia, and he wrote these poems that most of them I had trouble interpreting, but they were just great, great works. And so, you know, I had that as an influence. But I started writing lyrics probably in my mid-early 30s, so, you know, almost 20 years ago.
Very cool. And the lyrics in the book have started to be set to music with a friend of yours, and I'll let you talk about that, and eventually the songs will be available on a CD. One of them that people can actually hear at your site is The Great Recession, a song within the book, and that's come to life through music. Talk about that whole experience.
Well, the gentleman I'm working with is a guy named Dennis Dennis Thorne, and he is just a very talented singer-songwriter based in the mountains of Virginia. He's up in Lexington, Virginia, and I happened to cross him at a performance and got his card and contacted him, and he read the manuscript, and we decided we both sort of liked the direction of the book and where it was going, and he was a good match. So he did that in one other song, a song called Fair Play, which is also on the site. Put him to music, and we we agreed to what the sound should be, and we've actually recorded them. So those two are ready, and we actually have two more coming out within, I think, the next 30 days.
Oh, that's great. When someone writes a book, I've often wondered this, because I haven't sat down and wrote a novel. I've done some writing, but on shorter levels as far as storytelling goes. But when you're writing a full book, do you know as you're writing, or do you know when you begin, the beginning, middle, and end, or is it something that you discover as you're writing it, and things kind of surprise you?
In this case, it was much more things evolved and surprised me as it went along. I'm working on another book now, and I've actually, from this experience, learned to outline a little bit more and have some direction going into it. But I think this book really was better served where it was written in the height of the Great Recession. And so the ups and downs that were going on in my personal life and my business life influenced the demeanor of the book and the tone of the book. And I think for this particular book, that was a better approach. The book I happen to be working on now is a prequel to this book that will catch up with it, so it's a little bit easier to design. But in this case, it definitely evolved as I went, and the character evolved and became the singer-songwriter that he was and is in the book, and I think it worked out.
Yeah, that would keep things interesting as a writer, knowing that, or not knowing, as you're writing it, what's going to happen next. So you're really getting caught up in this. And in fact, I was reading at the site that I think it was your wife who said you really got lost in the characters at times and really right into the story.
Yeah, I'm not sure that's a good thing for her. For me, it was, because, I would at times wake up in the late hours of the night, and I have a tendency to miss out on some sleep with a little bit of insomnia most nights, but I would sort of drift into the character, and my mind would become Charles and Charles's endeavors, and I'd wake up the next day and end up peeling off the next chapter.
Oh, very cool. We don't want to give away everything that happens in the book, but our listeners can head to your website, and they can read the first six chapters, which is really cool. That'll get them right into the story and get them hooked on it. But give us a brief synopsis, Chris, of Charles the flea-bitten mongrel, who he's known as a country singer, and what he is going through in this book.
Well, the book opens, the first chapter is a little bit misleading in terms of the direction of the book. It really details my impressions and reactions to the Great Recession itself and its general impact on the economy and the Florida Panhandle, where this book it takes place. But once you pick up into Charles's world, he's a mysterious guy. He's playing these shows. He's sort of going from bar to bar, and it's pretty clear that there's something eating at him, and there's a past that he hadn't revealed to those that are beginning to know him. And as his career begins to blossom, and he starts to find success, and he goes from being basically a homeless wanderer playing various bars to go meal to meal, et cetera, to keep a little bit of gas in the tank, he settles in and is influenced by one of his really good friends to start taking life back on and becoming a little bit more of a stationary person in terms of having a home,
right,
et cetera. And during all that, he begins to realize he needs to reclaim and go after the things in his past that had laid him so low.
And that's what keeps us hooked as we read through it, to see that story unfold. His alias, Charles's alias, as I've mentioned, is the flea-bitten mongrel. Where did you come up with that expression? I mean, we've all heard it, but how did you choose that for his alter ego?
For whatever reason, it didn't take me very long to come up with his alter ego name. As I was, sort of doodling out different possible names for an artist, the whole image of a flea-bitten mongrel, it's a lovable creature, but you sort of pity it a little bit because it's, he's beat up, he's road-worn, et cetera. And, here was a guy that essentially was living out of his truck and playing the guitar and pretty unkempt at times, and then he starts to evolve into the person, more of the person he was, but a new person as well. But I just felt like it really was a good fit. The image of dogs are sort of important to me. I'm a huge dog lover, so, the good old whole sort of wandering mutt who, you know, you get to know and learn to love quickly is part of it, I think.
Now, what I find interesting about books when I'm reading a book, thinking who could play this role or that role as I'm reading it, do you have, if this were ever turned into a movie and we were dream casting here, who could you see in the role of Charles?
Russell Crowe has always been the one that I've come back to.
Interesting. Very interesting. I've seen him in movies where he has that kind of look. You know, he's got the longer hair and the beard going on, which would be a great look for Charles.
Absolutely. You know, the stubble. And, I picture Charles as sort of a, you know, he's a sensitive guy but a tough guy at the same time. And I don't know. I've actually given that a lot of thought because, to me, it helped picture for me to picture Charles and to picture him as a flea bit mongrel helped me a lot to think about different actors and people that I could put in his place. And you know, I really can't draw back to a single movie with Russell Crowe that made me feel that way, but I've pretty much felt strongly that way ever since I've written the book and while writing the book, actually.
Interesting. And any other actors or actresses come to mind for any of the other lead roles in here that you can envision?
You know, with his love interest, I think it would be someone relatively new, relatively fresh, because that's, you know, she's sort of a fresh face in his life. I don't know. I really haven't pictured the rest of them quite as much.
Right.
One of the lady that plays his strong friend and ends up being his manager, I can picture who she is, but I really can't attribute an actress to her. She is just a very strong, very self-assured, very attractive, very aggressive, but yet very caring female role. So I think, again, that would, you know, there are obviously a lot of actresses that could carry that, but I really haven't gotten it down to that. I think, you know, Charles is really the one I've tried the hardest to put a face and a name to.
Right. And the title of the book, Port City Pagans, of course, Port City is a fictional town, as I read. But talk about the pagans portion of that and how that falls into the title and book.
Well, it falls in the Port City thing came along because it's a relatively generic term for any number of cities along basically the East Coast and the Panhandle and the West Coast of Florida, et cetera. The pagan part was sort of the offset to that, where here you have, you know, a port city, and a lot of times you picture a port city as a beautiful place, and the pagans to me is a little bit of a harsh opposite, and is in this case a reference to the people of that town in this book by and large are pretty bad people. So, you know, the pagan part is sort of the pointing to the hypocrisy of the people that have caused this gentleman a lot of turmoil in his life, to say the least.
Now, just like with a country song, or a lot of country songs anyway, there are lessons in the messages that we as listeners will hear and might almost be like advice or just a way to live our life or something we can take away from the song. What do you hope, Chris, that people take away from this book as they read through it?
I think the overriding message to me and really the message that I've gotten from my own words is the same old thing, is you don't quit, you don't give up, you fight through the hard times, and you fight for what you believe is yours. And in the end, I think you have a good chance of making it.
Now, the opening of the book, as you mentioned, it really describes that time. The words are so beautiful and so well written. Was that the most challenging part, that first chapter, setting that up?
I don't think it was challenging in the sense I knew what I wanted to say, but it was one of those things that I wrote and rewrote so many times because I really wanted to set the scene. I wanted everybody to picture where this whole thing was taking place. And I felt like a lot of people, and I still feel like a lot of people, when they read it, they'll go, oh, yeah, I remember that. So
that's
pretty
ridiculous.
Yeah, that was more difficult. When you get into, or when I got into in this book, the conversational parts of the, you know, the dialogue, that often flowed a lot easier. Sometimes the lyrics actually flowed pretty easily. The Great Recession as a song came to me while I was writing. There's, you know, one of the characters references the Great Recession and says a few disparaging remarks about it and what it did to him, and all of a sudden a light went off in my head, and I started saying, that's probably a song.
And that, as I read and heard previously at your site, was one of the songs that did fall out as you were writing the book. And there were other songs that song lyrics that you had written prior that found their way into the book.
The main song that existed prior to the book is the opening tune that he plays in the first show in the book, and it's actually one of the songs that is on the website. It's called Fair Play. I don't even know when I wrote that. I tweaked it a little bit, but overall, it's pretty much the same lyrics that I wrote way back when. Because when I went to my folder of lyrics and pieces of songs, and you know, I think most writers have that, where you have little things you jot down and you keep them and go back and try to use them. When I went back to this, the loose leaf paper that it was on was in pretty rough shape, so I had a little bit of trouble reading it. My handwriting's not the greatest anyway, but it was handwritten, and I felt like it was a really good number to start the book with, because again, I feel like it sets a really good tone, and it references people that, you know, work in this, you know, the traveling circus, not circus, but traveling fairs, et cetera, and sort of the sad loneliness and the isolation and that kind of thing. And I felt like that was very appropriate for where Charles and the Flea-Bitten Mongrel were at that point in the book.
Now, were there parts of this book that were more challenging than others, maybe certain sections or certain pivotal points that you were trying to get just right?
I think the hardest parts, and they were not huge parts of the book, but was trying to make sure the voices of the children were on point, that they said and acted like they should at that age. And I have children, and I love children and relate very well to children, but I found it really difficult but also very important to make sure that if there was a child speaking, that it said something a child would say, that was appropriate for a child to say, that was said in a way a child would say it. So I definitely labored with that, even though that's not that much of the content of the book. It was an area that was definitely difficult and that required, in my opinion, very, very great care.
That makes a lot of sense because, I mean, things ring authentic with us as readers or listeners, and things stand out if it sounds not like something a child would say. So that's good that you took that time to make sure that was accurate.
Well, the love of the children in the book are a big part of the redemption quality of the story. And so the few words they said had a lot of impact, particularly on Charles.
Right. I'll remind our listeners now, the book is called Port City Pagans. My guest is the author, Christopher B. White. The website is portcitypagans.com. Great website designed by Stephanie Hall. You'll enjoy checking it out, listening to samples from the book, reading samples from the book, listening to some samples of the songs. Also, from there, you can find links to amazon.com, barnesandnoble.com, and a couple other links to actually purchase the book from. Let's talk a bit about country music in general, Chris, and maybe some of your favorites through the years, some artists you've enjoyed, songs if they happen to stick out in your mind that you've enjoyed, just sort of your love of country.
Well, when I was, I guess, 8th, 9th grade, I really started getting into a lot of different artists. One of my favorite artists at that time, and still to this day, is Jerry Jeff Walker, who plays a lot of tunes that others write, but also writes a lot of songs himself, his most famous being Mr. Bojangles. But right. He has a little tune that he wrote, and I read somewhere he really wasn't all that fond of it, but I am. It's called Little Bird, and it's sort of a little slice of life type song, and, you know, a depressing morning, you're looking out the window and the little bird on the windowsill. And it just, you know, those words and those type songs really had a lot of influence on me through my years of, you know, going through adolescence and growing up to the teenage years, et cetera. And so, you know, Jerry Jeff's always been very important to me. As time has gone on, you know, I didn't really used to listen to Guy Clark, who is a great songwriter, right? I used to just listen to people like Jerry Jeff sing his songs, but as time went on, I started really listening to him play his own songs, which he does a fantastic job with. And, I mean, you look at Guy Clark's, you know, resume and all the songs he's written, and he's just like Cinco de Mayo in Memphis is a relatively new song. It's just a fantastic song. The words say so much, and his use of the language is so fantastic. So those are the types of artists that I really gravitate towards. And, you know, there are a lot of people out there now, like, you know, on the radio, when I'm in my car, I listen to satellite radio, and I listen to basically the outlaw country type stuff. And there are a lot of people like Charlie Robison, and I can't remember if it's Robison or Robison, but the Charlie
Robison.
The brothers, they're, you know, their music, same thing, you know. El Cerrito Place, which is a Charlie song, just got covered by Kenny Chesney. And
that's right. You know, beautiful song.
Ah, that's a great song. And, yeah. And you know, I think Kenny Chesney did a great job with it, but anybody out there who hadn't listened to Charlie do his own song ought to listen to it, because he does a wonderful job himself.
I've heard that, and I've heard a bit of the song, actually, but I've also heard that feedback. I find that interesting, because a lot of times people do want to hear the original songwriter sing it. Whether their voice is better than that artist, it's just something about the person who wrote it can put a lot of heart into it, right? Because it's their song.
Absolutely, and when you go back and listen to his version of his song, you'll feel it. It is extremely, it's a powerful song. It's, you know, desperately searching for a lost love, and it's just, the words are great. Again, I do like the new version of it. I think Kenny Chesney did a great job on it. But, you know, another example of that is, I don't know if you're familiar with the Old Crow Medicine Show, but their Wagon Wheel song, Darius Rucker, is covered. And
that's right.
I think he did a great job, too. But, again, the Old Crow version is different, and I would recommend anybody that likes that song listen to their version as well, because it really, it's the same kind of thing. I think Darius did it more than great justice. I think he did a wonderful job. But the Old Crow also, it's their tune, and they really, they put it out there.
Yeah, it's a pretty amazing story. I actually had Chad Brownlee, who's a Canadian artist. He's covered the song as well. A lot of people are covering it, and he's got a great version on his album. Bob Dylan wrote the chorus of that, and a couple of members from the Old Crow Medicine Show, or one of them, wrote the lyrics around the verses. And it's such a catchy song. And as you say, their version is, it's the first one, so it's got that magic to it.
Well, I'm glad you mentioned the Dylan thing, because I'd forgotten about that. But it is very much a classic Dylan-type song, where it tells such a detailed story. You know, and
yes,
there's so many Dylan songs that do that, where he can just keep the words coming, but they don't go, you know, they don't go on deaf ears, because they all mean something and they flow so well. And I feel like that song does that. And it, you know, you can picture different parts of that story and that song as they go through it, which I think is a big part of music.
Definitely, when you can listen to a story song, and there are so many in country music, and it takes you somewhere, like Wagon Wheel does, and like so many do, you're actually on that journey with the character, with the singer in it.
Absolutely, and that's what I aspired to with my lyrics. And when I met up with Dennis and we started performing, the thing I really liked about Dennis is he just has a very soulful voice, and I think he is the right character and person to bring the Fleabitten Mongrels music to life, and I'm, you know, very excited about continuing to work with them.
The website is portcitypagans.com, which of course is named after the book. My guest is Christopher B. White. Now, you're talking about a prequel to the book, Chris. I think that's very cool. So we're going to get to learn a little bit more about Charles and his marriage, maybe in good times before the Great Recession hit.
Well, you're going to really get a much deeper taste of the inner workings of Port City, and how all the things that, you know, the representation of Port City in Port City Pagans, it, you know, is relatively brief. And this is going to take you a lot deeper into that, and there's going to be a lot of new characters introduced, and then it'll bring it back, and you'll see where Charles comes into the whole thing. And I think it's going to be good. I already know the first scene to the third book, and I've written it down. So I hope my goal is to have this prequel that catches up to Port City Pagans, and then I'm going to do one more book that will sort of close it out.
Very cool. I like that there's a couple more to come, so we can follow the story, go back, and then probably forward again. Well, what feedback have you had so far from readers and buyers of the book, Chris?
It's been overall really good. I mean, obviously you can't please everyone, and you know, anyone who puts something out there has to be ready for some people to not like it. But the people that have liked it and have related to it, I guess the best comments are they like the voice, you know, and the tone, and they like the direction and enjoy the lyrics, et cetera. The one comment that sort of has always surprised me a little bit is there were some people that I've talked to that I respect, but they thought some of the language in the conversations were maybe a little too colorful.
Okay.
I tried to figure out why they think that, because really they talk the way people I know talk. And, you know, there is some coarse language, but it's not overrun with it. And it's nothing compared to most of what you turn on cable TV and hear. It's nothing
exactly
like that. So, you know, that's one criticism that I've taken to heart and tried to consider, but I really don't get it. And maybe it's just, you know, different people with different backgrounds and see different things. But overall, it's gotten very good feedback. And one gentleman in particular loves the flea bitten mongrel character, and his comment was that, you know, there's a little bit of flea bitten mongrel in every man, and I thought that was a great quote.
That is a great quote. That shows that you've written a character that people can relate to, and they also root for, which is important, right? This is somebody we want to see succeed.
Absolutely. You know, at first, I think the way the book builds, and it's intentional, you don't know what you're going to think of him. But as it builds, I do think I think you get solidly in his corner, and as he fights his way through things, you fight with him. And that's, you know, when my wife talked about me getting into the character, there are times where I was thinking through scenes and bad things, and, you know, my jaw would be sticking out because inside I'm angry, and she's like, "Are you okay?" But you live it in your head, and you know, your outward appearance without your knowing so is revealing that, you know, you're emotionally involved with your own characters. At least I was, and I go back and read pieces of it because, like I said, I'm writing more about it. So when I go back through it, you know, there are a couple scenes in there that I really, you know, they ripped my guts out, and I wrote it.
Well, I think that says a lot about it, that you're that close to the character. I think that's important. If you were detached from it, that wouldn't resonate with us as well, because the more you're into it, the more we're going to feel that on the page.
Well, you know, there are characters in the book that are despicable that you know, no one would necessarily like.
Right.
But
right.
With Charles, I do think he is... He's sort of an average guy that's had a lot unloaded on him. And the fight is important, because I think most people respect people that have fight in them. And you couple that with talent and drive and, you know, kindness and all the other characteristics that he shows, and his desire to love and be loved. It's to me, that's sort of what it's like, or supposed to be like, to be a human.
Yeah, very true. I know this conversation is going to spur a lot of people to order the book and want to read it. Of course, they can do so by heading to portcitypagans.com. There's links there to amazon.com, barnesandnoble.com, some other links to order the book. You can read the first 6 chapters for free right online, and that'll get you hooked on the book as well. As we get set to wrap up here, Chris, who could you see singing, say, The Great Recession? And, of course, you've got Dennis Thorne, who's doing a great job, but of the big names out there, who would give you a thrill to have that song or any one of your songs sung by?
Well, The Great Recession is Jamie Johnson to me.
Ah, nice. Jamie is so traditional country and so hardcore. He would fit that perfectly.
And actually, I think he is probably the guy for most of what my artist has to say. I'm a huge fan. I like, you know, everything about his music. And he's the guy.
Yeah. He, of course, one of his big songs is In Color, which is a beautiful song, did really well on the charts. And I could see him, if he were to do some acting, Jamie Johnson would work well in that role.
Absolutely. And I'm glad you said that, because I've always thought that, too. I don't add him because I don't think he's acted. I don't know if that's true or not.
Yeah, I'm not
but
sure.
If he were, you know, interested in doing acting, this would be an ideal role for him. Because
yeah.
He has the look. He has, you know, I mean, he's the real deal in terms of the you know, the singing songwriter who's been to the bars and lived the life.
Yeah, definitely. That would be perfect casting. It has been such a pleasure, Chris, to chat with you here, to talk about the book and share the stories. And I really enjoyed it. Thanks so much for coming on the show.
Thank you for having me. I enjoyed it as well.
My guest has been Christopher B. White, author of the country music novel, Port City Pagans. Again, the website, portcitypagans.com. I'm Dave Woods. Be sure to check out more country interviews at inthecountryinterviews.com.